slate, but McPherson convinced the network to have one more meeting. After another performance from Zwicker, drama development chief Nina Tassler made an exception. She'd loved the hit series Quincy, about a coroner, and as she put it, she loved a good autopsy. Tassler ordered a pilot. As the production company for the series, Disney Touchstone still had the opportunity to earn big profits on CSI. Network licensing fees almost never cover the cost of producing a series, but the production company retains the syndication rights to resell the show after its initial network run. If a program is a hit, the syndication fees can be huge when the show is sold for rebroadcast. Syndication revenues are the lifeblood of the TV production industry. But Iger had already proclaimed his lack of interest in producing shows for rival networks. Why, he reasoned, should Touchstone incur a deficit to produce a show that ABC didn't think was good enough to put on its schedule? Within days of CBS picking up the CSI pilot, Iger convened a meeting to address the issue of whether Touchstone should produce a show for a rival network. ABC's chief financial officer had worked up three scenarios, high, medium, and low, depending on how CSI performed in the ratings, purporting to show that even under the high scenario, CSI would lose money for Touchstone. "What's the deficit per episode?" Iger asked. McPherson explained it was about $1 million. "We can't do that," Iger said. "Michael won't understand how we can spend $1 million a show to subsidize CBS." The potential flaw in Iger's reasoning was that ABC's judgment might not be infallible, and that CSI could be a hit on another network. Braun and McPherson were both upset and insisted on meeting with Eisner to press the case. They argued that it would be devastating to Touchstone's ability to sell to other networks if it pulled out of CSI now that CBS had picked it up. Besides, CSI might be a hit. Why give up the potential syndication revenues? In contrast to Iger, Eisner often wanted Touchstone to sell shows to other networks. But the CSI situation seemed to bring out his competitive instinct to inflict failure on a rival. In the final meeting, Eisner said he didn't care if CSI was a hit if it was on a network other than ABC. He also warned that Bruckheimer was a profligate spender and that deficits would probably be a lot more than $1 million per episode. Besides, he didn't think CBS would be willing to pick up the production costs, and if Disney pulled out, the show would die, creating a hole in the CBS lineup. Braun was ordered to call Bruckheimer and pull the plug. The unflappable Bruckheimer took the news calmly. He was disappointed, but gracious. But Eisner and Iger underestimated his determination and that of Les Moonves, the head of CBS. Instead of dropping CSI as they had anticipated, CBS lined up another producer, Alliance Atlantis Communications, which pre-sold some foreign rights to raise $800,000 per episode, an amount that nearly covered the projected deficit. CBS financed the rest, minimizing the potential loss. CBS placed CSI as the centerpiece of its Friday night schedule for fall 2000. That February 1999, Eisner had asked Steve Burke to come into his office in New York on one of his many visits to ABC headquarters. Despite his